Hi, and welcome to Should I Be Mad About This? The podcast. I'm Nancy Ferguson, the host, and I'm excited to bring you this first episode. This podcast is meant to be a chance to explore issues that require more than a headline, that require a little bit more discussion, a little bit more background and context, and also a chance for us to be honest about the things that we haven't done the research on. So the basic structure of this is I'm going to ask a question that starts with, should I be mad about? I'm going to introduce a guest who will help me to answer it. And I'm going to tell you what I know starting out, and then we'll run at it with the person who knows so much more about this. So, yeah. Today's question, we're starting with a totally non-emotional issue, because no one feels feelings about this. And the question is, should I be mad about how many shelters in the United States euthanize perfectly healthy animals? I hear you all screaming at me. Yes. Yes, there are a lot of feelings. My guest today is going to help us with those and to give us some background. She's a good friend of mine who has not only volunteered with her city shelter in Indianapolis, she also has taken on parts of the adoption process with them. She has done a lot of really good work in training. She's adopted dogs that needed fostering. And she's one of my go-to dog people. The other one is my sister, but you don't pull sisters for your first podcast. You just don't do that. So where I start out on this one is some basic knowledge. I lived most of my adult life in an area with a no-kill shelter, and so have the general understanding that it's not great to kill the animals, of course. No one really wants animals to die. But also that area with the no-kill shelter has a lot of resources, and I know that that's part of the issue. So I'm really interested to see how Amber helps me break it down. And I've just spoiled her name. There we go. So I think it's time to introduce Amber, my guest and friend coming in from Indianapolis, Indiana. Amber, hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited. Thank you so much for being my first guest. I want you to start by introducing yourself, give a little more maybe of where you are right now in terms of your relationship with animal shelters.
Sounds good. My name is Amber. I've been volunteering with Indianapolis Animal Care Services for actually exactly 5 years now. This is my fifth anniversary, so that's pretty cool.
Oh!
So right now, how I'm connected to the shelter is I'm responsible for, not all, but a good portion of the dogs that are part of our Lodge and Learn program. What we're doing is taking the dogs that are really stressed at the shelter, maybe just need extra help because they've been overlooked, they've been at the shelter for entirely too long, maybe they actually need additional training because they have stranger danger and issues like that. We send them to different board and train facilities where they can get extra one-on-one attention, maybe a little bit of extra training, or just time out of the noisy, stressful shelter. It's not exactly a place that you're happy to spend your night. And these dogs are there 24/7, you know, for months.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
So one of our dogs, actually, she has been with us since January. Her owner passed away. She's got some stranger danger issues. So she's staying with a trainer, and she's gotten a lot better. But what I do for these dogs is I post their information on social media. So I assist with running it's a Facebook page for the indie shelter pets that are available for adoption. It's not connected directly with the shelter, but volunteers run it. It gives us a little bit more freedom to say what we want to say on there and post what we want, you know. So being part of a county shelter with state funds means that they can't post everything that's on their mind. But we can. So
I love it.
Yeah. So
all right.
I post their information. I created an email account specifically for this so that potential adopters can reach out to me and I can field these adopters and then set them up on meet and greets with these dogs that they're interested in. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. But I started 5 years ago with walking the dogs and just getting them some time out of those kennels.
So, all right. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I want to emphasize for folks that, especially in my first few podcasts, I'll be having friends on who are going to talk about their passions or their, you know, areas that they know something about. And I'm not trying to cast them as full experts. I'm not saying that Amber has run a facility or has control over how Indiana handles this. We're just having a conversation that she knows more about than I do. So, Amber, let's circle back to this question. The question is, should I be mad about how many shelters in the U.S. euthanize perfectly healthy animals? So my first question to you is, have you ever been asked something like this before? And what was next, or why did it come up?
I struggle with this, actually, because I haven't been asked it this way. But as you said, this is a very emotional question. So
you've been yelled at from afar in all caps from Facebook, maybe.
Yes. And some of my friends like to refer to me as a counter trolling specialist. So I have gotten into some tiffs with people on Facebook about how these things happen. I
need that on your resume, stat.
I think it's part of my Facebook little blurb. I think it literally says like counter trolling specialist or something like that.
All right. So you haven't necessarily had someone come up and ask you this question, but the subject is one that you're familiar with.
Yes.
So let's come at it this way then. What makes this issue harder for people to get a handle on or to really kind of understand logically?
First is just the emotions involved, right?
Right.
But also what a lot of people don't understand is we have I'm a volunteer. So staff has so many rules and regulations that they have to work with that just makes it harder. You know, there's also not enough funding. There's just so many different problems with an open intake shelter that people don't necessarily, if you don't.
Talk to me about that. Open intake shelter. Can you define that a little bit?
Absolutely. So we are the state's largest open intake shelter. So Indianapolis is part of Marion County, which is we're the capital city,
right?
Largest, I think, city in Indiana, I'm going to assume. I should know that, right?
Good. We'll look it up later. Don't worry. Keep going.
The largest.
That's not the question we asked.
Yes. So the largest open intake shelter means that Indianapolis Animal Care Services is required to take in every single animal that comes their way. Dogs, cats, alligators, snakes, guinea pigs. We had a camel once.
What?
Goats, horses. Yes. Yeah. I swear, that was one of the very first things that I learned when I started volunteering. So in orientation, they told us that they will take in anything and that we had a camel. One of the staff members recently posted a picture with that camel from like 6 years ago.
Wow. Camel.
Camel.
That's fantastic. I imagine they didn't keep the camel very long.
Probably not.
Because that would be a really tough thing for a county shelter.
We do have stables. Oh, there is that. But still, like, it's a camel.
Mm-hmm.
Not a horse.
Mm-mm.
Used to horses, used to pigs, goats. At one point, we had like 500 chickens.
A lot of chickens.
It was one of those fighting rings.
Yeah. Oh, that's really unfortunate.
It's really unfortunate.
So an open... Everything. Will you say the word one more time? It was an open...
It's an open intake shelter.
Open intake shelter. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are specifically, right, the public ones.
Correct.
Ones run by counties, by states, by whoever, like a government-run facility. And I imagine they have government rules attached to them, right? Not only do they have to accept all the animals, but there are probably government-issued rules.
Correct.
So what are some of those rules? Is it things that we would expect? Are they surprising? Where does euthanizing animals come into play?
So this isn't specific to our shelter. Although I do think it did used to, this used to be a problem, but breed specific legislation.
Legislation is a word, man.
I know, right? It's a huge problem. So as you've probably heard, a lot of individual cities and states even.
Yeah.
Colorado, but not anymore, right? I think. They do not allow people to own pit bulls.
Which is wild, because they're the nicest nanny dogs.
Sweetest dogs ever, I say.
Biased. Owning one.
I own one, and my best friend owns one. And so a lot of places don't allow these dogs to be adopted out. They will, in some counties, allow rescues to... pull the dogs to their rescue to be adopted out, but the actual government facility cannot adopt out pit bulls.
Because of the rules. Okay. So that's one. Not
our facility. Our facility, though, was created specifically to house stray animals. So literally the dog that you see running down the streets, you know, without its collar or whatever, you know, an animal care officer would pick up the dog and then take it to the facility to be held. Now that's where the crappy part comes in. Stray weight is only 4 days.
So wow.
Back in the day, our facility was used just to hold them and then essentially put them down.
Dang. So
the facility can only hold like 200 dogs right now.
That doesn't seem like a lot for a city the size of Indianapolis.
Not. We are currently, we just got approved to build a new shelter. There's,
congratulations.
Thank you. There's a spot, I don't know, somewhere on the east side that they're going to be building. But of course, we've got to raise funds for that. So eventually there will be some fundraisers. There's some money that's going to come from the city budget, but the rest has to be fundraised, of course.
Back in the day, it was a setup for stray animals, and they had 4 days to either find the owner, have someone claim the animal, I assume?
Mm-hmm.
Or just then, put it down.
Right. So most of the time, pit bulls just got put down. I mean, wow. Something like, you know, a cute lab or a golden retriever probably got adopted out. But...
Oh, so they would also adopt, but they had 4 days to do it.
So you have 4 days to claim, and then on that fifth day, they can make that dog adoptable. And then, yeah, and that's still the rule. So you have 4 days to claim your dog. The next day, they can temp test your dog and
decide.
Put your dog on the adoption floor. Yeah.
Hmm.
So, but... Back then, they didn't really adopt out pit bulls. Now they do. So, and our live release rate has gotten so much better. We're in the 90s now.
Talk to me about that.
So, we are...
For folks who aren't sort of as versed, maybe, in the lingo, a live release rate sounds kind of self-explanatory, but may be worth explaining.
Sure. So, a live release rate is... literally the amount of animals, it's usually, it's a percentage of the animals that leave the shelter alive. And it could be for, they could be euthanized for any reason. I mean, it could
right, they could be ill, they could be, like, lots of other reasons. They could have gotten hit right. by a car.
In order to be a no-kill shelter, you have to be in the 90%. I'm going to have to look that up and actually send that to you later.
Okay, so that's really interesting. You're saying that no-kill shelters are not 100%.
They are not. So at that point, when they're euthanizing, they're euthanizing because a dog is sick. Or they're, you know, only euthanizing. They're not euthanizing because they're full, which is what a lot of open intake shelters have, you know, do have to do occasionally, is euthanize because they're full. So, okay. We're well on our way to becoming a no-kill open intake shelter, which is really awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
But, so, I imagine that's where kind of the crux of the emotional argument comes from, right? Is before you hit that 90%, the idea that you would kill one dog to make room for another, right? And we're speaking in dogs here. We could be speaking in cats. We could be speaking in lots of other animals. But dogs are the one that the two of us know best, and so we're going to often refer to dogs.
Yeah, you could literally say dogs, but mean cats. I mean, it's pretty interchangeable at this point.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about that decision and how, like, what do you know about how that decision gets made, and why do people get angry?
So when the shelter isn't super full, you know, we've got a couple of open kennels at least, you'll see that we've got dogs that we're trying to adopt out that might be super dog aggressive. This is just one example that came up very recently.
Say that term again.
Dog aggressive?
Dog so aggressive, okay.
So
yeah.
Like, yeah, if they get adopted out, we need you to know this dog cannot go to a home with other dogs, and you're not going to be able to go to a dog park. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't take him to the dog-friendly brewery or anything like that. You really just need to take very close care that you're not going to let him, you know, interact with other dogs. But more recently, when we were pretty full, a dog did get put down for being very dog aggressive. He was adoptable for a very long time. We were super full. We had wire crates in the hallways to put the dogs into. So we had to make room. So that's one reason that it might happen. If a dog starts to get very stressed, and you'll see it with, like, spinning in the kennel. He might start snapping or redirecting on people walking him. Then a dog might get put down for that when we're super full. But that's what my program does. So that's when we try to move the dog to a different facility or get into foster, something like that.
And so at this point at your facility, this is the exception rather than a regular occurrence.
Absolutely.
Because it sounds like you guys are either, like you said, you're pulling them into other facilities where, you know, someone... And those are mostly just... Are those nonprofits? Are they private? Like, who's running those, and how are they able to take all these complicated dogs? Are they just people who love dogs? Like, what's happening?
So there are a couple of different options. So we have the rescue page, which is actually, you heard us talking about our rescue page when you were in town. So the staff member who runs that is amazing. She's got 170,000 connections to different rescues.
Wow.
The best, honestly. But when dogs start to get really stressed, first, you know, we might try to put them on the rescue page and see if we can get one of our rescue partners to pull them. And those are nonprofits. They have to be, that's one of the things, actually. They have to be nonprofit 501c3 to pull from our shelter.
A rule, I assume.
A rule, yes. Mm-hmm. The facilities that I work with are actually they're actually boarding facilities for profit. So the person responsible for this whole program is one of my closest friends. She is amazing. I mean, when I started 5 years ago, she started around the same time as me, and she immediately was drawn to the dogs that have behavior issues and started working on training programs for them. And it's just evolved over the years. So when COVID started, and maybe this happened before and my memory is just not as good, but when COVID started, you know, we were all really scared. Like, what the heck is going to happen to our dogs?
Sure.
You know, is anybody going to be able to take care of them? They weren't allowing volunteers for a period of time. I mean, it was really rough. So she immediately went into work with the area boarding facilities to see if anybody could take some of our dogs just to lighten the load. And since then, it's evolved to the stressed dogs and the dogs that need additional training and things like that. But they are for-profit facilities, just like, so Pet Palace, Paws and Play are the ones that I work mostly with.
So when people take, when you guys place a dog there, and are the facilities getting paid, or are they sort of donating this?
So they are getting paid, but they do cut us a deal.
Amazing.
So yes, it's an amazing program. It's really great. And we get to learn more about these dogs.
Right. So,
you know, I've got one right now who was super stressed at the shelter. He was getting a little bit more attention because he was so stressed. However, going there means that he gets out that many more times a day. They get to spend additional time with him. And now I get to say in his posts, hey, Rigby is a super sweet dog who really loves to play with literally any toy that he will find on the ground. You know, we don't always get to see that side of them. But they do... they do get paid, but they did cut us a deal. So it's honestly a really, really great program.
So let's circle back to the original question, which is, should I be mad, right? About shelters who have to euthanize animals. And I'm sensing there's something of a spectrum of anger.
Yeah.
And that your example... it sounds like a public facility that is working very hard to get to one end of that spectrum. In terms of sort of people who get very wound up about this, or people who feel automatically that if it's not labeled no kill, it's a bad shelter.
Mm.
Is there anything that you would say to them about sort of how to find more information about the shelter in question, or about where to direct their anger if they have it?
So first, I mean, find out more information just by Googling the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're a city shelter. There are all kinds of press releases. You can find out, you know, how hard we're working. You know, look us up on Facebook. But as a more general, more broad sense, you know, reach out to your city politicians and ask them to fund these shelters. Ask them to give more money. That's really who your anger needs to be directed towards. The people who work in animal welfare, who volunteer in animal welfare, they are doing this out of the goodness in their hearts. They're trying their hardest. Like, you don't want to be mad at them.
In terms of someone saying, yeah, so you have great answers about the Indianapolis shelter. It sounds like it's made a lot of progress. It sounds like it's getting where it needs to be. It's making the right decisions. It's trying its best to avoid euthanizing a healthy animal. But, you know, what about this other one? What about this other place? What types of information is out there? What questions should people ask and of whom to get more information about their own local shelter or the one that sounds like such a bad deal. I mean, I know on the surface, right? There's an organization, and we won't get too far into this, but the protection of animals that's famous for the anti-fur and all those other things. I've recently learned that they run shelters. And you would think, perhaps, that those shelters might, on the surface, be less inclined to euthanize their animals. But where do people go to get statistics or information about things like this?
Google.
But what do they Google?
You can Google your shelter name or whatever specific shelter is in question. And then statistics, or if you're curious about live release rate. So, for example, when I was preparing for this, I Googled Indianapolis Animal Care Services live release rate, and it took me directly to the shelter statistics page. Statistics is a hard word as well.
It is.
and there was a list of, just the yearly numbers. So
okay,
that's a good way to do that. But just whatever specific shelter in question, and the word statistics is a pretty good way to go about searching.
Great. All right. That's good to know. And then talk to me about, do you have an example of shelters or of the issues or the areas in which the live release rate is a much lower number? Because you were talking about Indianapolis is almost, like you said, up to the level of being able to call themselves a no-kill shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So where do a lot of shelters that don't have the funding and don't have the volunteers and don't have all of the resources, where do they fall?
So I've noticed we have a very large problem in the Midwest, and also southern states, from what I'm seeing, have pretty big problems. You guys in the Northeast are fantastic. You're doing great.
We like to be the best. Whatever.
Be extra. It's fine. I can't point you to any very specific shelters.
It's not what you do. You don't focus your energy on.
Right. I even personally, if I've noticed that they're Facebook friends who will post the overly sad animal welfare things, I have started to take a step back and unfollow. So I try to point myself in a slightly more positive direction.
You know, in international development, we call those posts, and again, these would be focused on people, usually not animals, but poverty porn.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
I'm sure there is a similar term of some sort, but it's that full-on, not giving dignity, in that case, to the person, which is egregious, and then B, that sort of, I'm going to guilt trip you and play the sad music, which we all know the song we're all thinking of right now.
My mom to this day will not watch that commercial.
It's a tough commercial. We know it. Is there any other context you would like to give someone who does watch that sad commercial and get the tear in their eye and think, how could you? How could you do this?
We're trying our best, guys. Dang.
Fair. What about the spaying and neutering argument?
Which part of it?
I've heard people say, if people would spay and neuter their animals, our shelters would be so much less full.
That's true.
Okay, well, that's good to hear.
Yes. I mean, if you look at, anecdotally, because I haven't done any research to back this up. So
fair.
We, a friend's sister was dating someone from England.
My favorite type of research. Please go on.
Yes. Very kind. And he spoke with an accent. So, everything was better, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he was genuinely surprised at how easy it was to just walk into a shelter and get a dog. Apparently, over there, it's a lot harder, and I believe it's because they have the spay and neuter laws in England. So,
and thus fewer animals.
And thus fewer animals.
Interesting. Okay. But
you bring in spay and neuter, you cut out backyard breeding, cut out puppy mills. Oh my god, puppy mills. I mean, if all you had to worry about was good, and there are good, responsible breeders who aren't inbreeding their dogs like crazy, the lives of these animals would be so much better. And shelters wouldn't be as full as they are.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the point where I want to circle back to my question and attempt an answer. So, you know, I did name the podcast, Should I Be Mad About This? And that was done on purpose. I'm looking to represent, you know, where I'm coming from information-wise, what I know, and whether I can learn something and make a decision on, you know, how do I feel about this issue. I would like to do it in partnership with my guest. And having heard all of this information about shelters, about the challenges they faced, about the funding, about other ways we could affect pet population, about ways that loud yelling with ineffective solutions may or may not help, I want to circle back to the question, should I be mad about animal shelters that euthanize perfectly healthy animals? And I think I have my answer, but I want to hear yours. If you had to say a yes or a no.
No, you should not be mad about that. You should ask yourself, what can I do to make these issues go away and these animals' lives better? What can you do to help?
Fantastic, because that's the question I was going to just say, is I think we've answered some of this, but let's sum it up, because I also feel like, no, I don't think the shelters, unless you come across a particularly egregious one, or one that isn't trying, or they have some, you know, scandal or reason, but generally, you don't go to work every day just to make yourself sad. So what should I, or someone listening, do instead? You mentioned a couple of things.
Volunteer. Mm-hmm. Adopt. Adopt, adopt, adopt. Foster. If you can't adopt, foster. If you can't do either, share the heck out of our posts.
100%. And then, what if I have a lot of rage about this, and I have a lot of time? And it's not so much about the one-to-one, but I want to fix it. Then we're going up to more of a policy level, and I'm a policy nerd. You guys will learn that about me. But you said something earlier about bother your city representatives who decide the funding. And then you said something later about England, which has spay and neuter laws. Why do we not have spay and neuter laws in our states, in our country? These are questions where anger can make a real difference. And if those were changed, potentially we wouldn't need to ask this question. Is that right?
That's right.
Anything else at that level that you'd love to throw a loud, angry person with no fear at?
Probably.
For this issue, of course. I mean, I know there's a lot of things to throw loud angry people with no fear at, but...
For this issue specifically?
Yeah.
Puppy mills, man. Why are we still puppy mills? Taking down the puppy mills. If we can talk to our city representatives, our state representatives, into not allowing puppy mills to even exist anymore, or better, well, not better yet. I mean, a step below that would be to not allow pet stores, which I believe Illinois recently did this, don't allow pet stores to sell dogs from puppy mills. there are states out there that will only allow their pet stores to adopt out dogs from rescues.
And that's new.
Yes, it is new. Like, within the last 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. I have heard that as well, and that is definitely a new, exciting kind of development, and probably a big throw to the pet store people, but I haven't heard of a lot of them closing, so it's probably not an impossible situation.
Probably not.
Interesting. All right, well, I think that's a lot of actionable items that anger is way more useful in solving. And that would, in fact, chip away at the euthanization rates in shelters. So you get two birds, one stone, which is not a metaphor that anyone who cares about euthanizing animals is going to like.
Big yikes.
But I did it, and I'm sorry. I want to thank Amber for coming on, giving this her best shot. Warning me when we're slipping into a possible libel situation about possible national organizations that we shall not name. And and I want to give you a chance, Amber, to plug something. I have a guess as to what you're going to plug, but let's hear it.
So I would like to plug our foundation. It's called the Friends of Indianapolis Animal Care Services. We call it the Friends Foundation, but they are the ones who help with everything. The Friends Foundation is responsible for the Lodge and Learn program. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for paying for heartworm treatment for dogs who come into the shelter with heartworm and then get adopted out. They'll pay for that. They pay for just all kinds of things you wouldn't think of that a shelter would need. We have a fundraiser starting on October 20th.
Fantastic. And I have seen sweatshirts, and they are epic.
Oh, the sweatshirts. Let me send you the link for the sweatshirts.
Please do.
Our shirts are so dang cute.
Yeah, guys, for context, this one that I saw, I believe the phrase was, find your boo.
Yes.
And it's a picture of and like, come on, is there anything cuter? And it's so Halloween, and it's the absolute best. I want one, and I live in Massachusetts, and it is silly for me to have an Indianapolis sweatshirt, but I might get it anyway.
I mean, it's adorable. And you could also get a sticker.
Yeah.
You know, that works
too. A t-shirt.
A t-shirt.
Lots of other things. Yep. Yeah. All right. So thanks again, Amber. Guys, go and check out the IACS Friends of the Shelter fundraiser. I've done that all terribly wrong. We're going to have a link. It's going to be okay. Buy an adorable, adorable merch, because they are real cute. And help solve this problem in a more productive way. Thank you all so much for listening. This has been Should I Be Mad About This? And I'll see you next time.